At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. It's our spring fun drive. More on that in just a minute. From glaciers to sand dunes, snowy mountains to sunny beaches, America's national parks hold many of our country's most iconic landscapes. And travel writer Mike Oswald has hiked, biked, and paddled through them all. He's trekked thousands of miles over hundreds of visits and distilled what he's learned into his book, Your Guide to National Parks. He's also put together park maps, an atlas of the United States National Park System. Mike Oswald, welcome back to All Sides.
Great to be here, Anna. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, not a problem. I like coming to Columbus.
So you're listening to All Sides here on 89.7 NPR News, and we're asking you to support this nonprofit public service radio station. You can visit WOSU.org this hour or call 866-897-9678. And this hour, we've got some wonderful thank you gifts to help with your upcoming travel plans. For $10 a month, you get the book, Your Guide to the National Parks. It's an award-winning guidebook, and it includes 450 photographs, 160 maps, 50 hiking tables. It is the only book you're going to need to explore the national parks in the United States. You get this great book at $10 a month as a sustainer when you give to WOSU.org or when you call 866-897-9678. If you can swing $30 a month as a sustaining member, you get a great gift package called the National Parks Bundle. This includes 3 books and a journal. So you get the Your Guide to National Parks. You get National Park Maps, which is an atlas of the U.S. National Parks, the Day Hiker's Guide to National Parks, and a park journal. We're going to talk about all of these gifts throughout the hour, but whether you give $10 or $30 a month, you'll be getting a great thank you gift and supporting public radio. Mike Oswald is a good friend of WOSU and All Sides. He drove all the way to be here today to tell us more about National Park Adventures. So support this show with a gift now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. So, Mike, summer vacation is just around the corner, and national parks are a great place for us to visit. So I want to start our conversation with how to pick the right one for your family. So if you all love to bike ride or kayak or really love going to the beach, which parks should we consider for these different activities?
Well, the parks offer a wide range of varieties. And if you're looking for biking, paddling, there are definitely a whole bunch of parks could offer both of those things. I think for summer, you kind of want to stay towards the mountains. You're looking at the Rocky Mountains, Sierra Nevada, the Cascades. Glacier National Park, always a good choice. That's one of my favorites. Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, also a fantastic choice. Historically, I've kind of been pointing people in the direction of the deserts just because you always get good weather. So that's one of the things that you have to worry about when you're in the mountains. You might have clouds, you might have fog, and that definitely changes the way people see things. So I've met people at Glacier that like hated it, don't want to go back. And then I'm like, well, what was the deal with that? And then we get up to a viewpoint and it's nothing but clouds. And like, yeah, that can definitely change things.
Yeah. And if you're looking to beat the heat, actually, Mammoth Cave in Kentucky is not that far away. Mm-hmm. And it's all underground. So it's a balmy 60-ish degrees no matter what the weather is outside.
Natural air conditioning. Take advantage of it.
Yeah. And if you've never done it, it's a beautiful, like there's cathedral spaces. There's really like narrow spaces. Like it's amazing how big and far reaching those tunnels are.
And they even converted a room into a concert hall for Yo-Yo Ma came there not too long ago to play his cello and put on a performance for people. And it was also used for somebody else, like, I don't remember. One of the Booth brothers was in there giving a soliloquy.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that you could check out. I also want to talk a little bit about some of the national parks that are just a day drive from here. in central Ohio. Obviously, there's Cuyahoga Valley National Park. That's here in the state of Ohio, which some people who don't live here might be really surprised that we have a national park.
Yeah, and Cuyahoga Valley spans from Cleveland to Akron, and it offers both of those things that you're looking for, bike riding, paddling, Cuyahoga River. When I first went out there, didn't see any whitewater rafters. Now there's whitewater rafters going down there, and they have the train. You can put kayaks on it, you can put bicycles on it, and then you can bike down the towpath canal or towpath trail.
Yeah, you can also run down the trail if that's your thing.
Yeah, definitely. Anything you want to do.
Yeah, there's New River Gorge National Park in West Virginia.
That one is one of the most recent parks added to the collection, and it's kind of an adrenaline junkie's territory to explore. It's rock climbing, there's whitewater rafting. It gives sort of every level of whitewater rafting is available there, where you can have the upper new is kind of just slightly splashy, and then it gets splashier down on the lower new with a couple class 5 rapids. And if you want to get outside of the national park, you can go to Gauley National Recreation Area and get some pretty extreme whitewater. We're rafting down there, then the guides are kind of showing you, helicopter landed here to save somebody, helicopter landed here to save somebody, and it's kind of like, is this kind of the water you want to be on?
Yeah, and spring is the time for whitewater rafting in particular, if that's something you're interested in, because a lot of mountain snow and spring thaw, that's when you really get those rushing rivers.
Mm-hmm. And the New River is really unique because it's flowing north and the water is uncommonly warm. So if you go there in spring and you're expecting cold water, maybe you still want a wetsuit, but it's going to be warmer than you expect when you get in there. And
good to know if you get ejected from the raft boat.
Yep, which may happen.
It can happen. I want to say a quick thank you to Delia Atkins from Columbus. She has donated and left a comment saying, "It feels so good to finally donate. I feel happy and good." And you should feel happy and good too, because I, you know, as somebody who loves the national park system, who's been to a bunch, you know, the guide is, I was flipping through it the other night with my family. And what I love about it is you break it out by activity and park. So you can flip to any park and you can look for biking, camping, kayaking, hiking, hiking by skill level, hiking for kids. And, you know, you don't go into super depth on each one, but you give a real sense of what your availability and what your options are for each park.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of the whole point. I want to show people what's possible in our parks. And a big reason why I wanted to do that is because I had no clue what was possible, even in our country. Kind of everybody's telling people to go to Europe, and then you finally stay home, and you're just like, oh my goodness, the United States is amazing. And so you already brought up Mammoth Cave, New River Gorge, Cuyahoga Valley, so there's a lot of amazing places within a couple hour drives from here. And then you go out west, and it's kind of unlimited wilderness and public land and lots of kind of wild and crazy things you can do.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think, you know, sometimes Europeans will pick on Americans for not being quote unquote well traveled. And I'm like, you don't really understand how big the country is.
Yeah, I think the United States is considerably bigger than Europe, right? So some of our states are as big as countries over there.
Yeah, you can be well traveled without leaving the U.S.
And so to the contrary to that point is like when people from other countries come here, the first thing they say is, oh, my God. This was such a far drive from this place to this place, where they think like they're going to go to the Grand Canyon maybe and Yosemite or something, two of the iconic parks. And it's a long drive in between those two destinations.
Oh, yeah. Another one that's close by is Indiana's Dune National Park.
Yeah, that's another one of the recent additions to the National Park collection. And right along Lake Michigan, you've got water opportunities. It's popular for swimming, not so much paddling, but I've seen people out there on stand-up paddle boards kind of floating around sometimes with their dogs. And you can see the good example of dune succession, where the dunes close to the lake are all sand, and then further you get grasses and trees, and it's kind of cool going through the layers of dunes in the park.
I have a controversial question for you.
Uh-oh.
Do you have a favorite national park?
I kind of jumble it into three favorites, where it's Glacier, Yosemite, and then Yellowstone.
Some of the iconic ones.
Yeah, they're definitely iconic, and they have just beautiful backcountries, unlimited trails, unlimited opportunities for different activities, and like never ever get sick of seeing them, except for maybe on those days I was mentioning when they're socked in with fog or clouds or rain and you wouldn't rather not be there.
Yeah. And those are the ones that we definitely all know. But I want to talk a little bit about underrated national parks. So, for example, everyone knows the Grand Canyon, but I don't know that everyone knows Black Canyon of the Gunnison in Colorado.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right about that. And it is gaining some steam, I think, in social media circles. But yeah, it's a narrower canyon. They actually found that you could run railroad tracks through the canyon's floor, and one guy went through on a mattress to see if you could actually run it to check if you could build a rail line through that canyon. And kind of the early adventurers. But it has some good hiking trails. You can hike into the canyon. Most of the trails are up on top where you're looking in, and just unique rock. It's called Black because of the rock there, not because of the shadows that enshroud it.
Yeah, and it's on the way to Telluride and Ouray, some really iconic places. So if you're driving from Denver, it is a great day trip on the way, say, to like Telluride or Ouray.
Yeah, absolutely. And to Utah, too. It's a great location. See, Colorado National Monument's right there. And we go north to Dinosaur National Monument. So there's lots of options. Very centrally located for a lot of cool outdoor activities.
And I want to say thank you to Dominique Meadows from Columbus. This is 89.7 NPR, and it's our membership drive. We're asking you to support this public radio station today. You listen to All Sides for in-depth analysis of the most important news of the day. But there's also room on the show to take a break. Shows like this one, about travel and the joys of the great outdoors. These shows are important, too. And if having a talk show that is truly local is important to you, please consider giving at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. If you make a donation this hour of $30 a month as a sustainer, you'll get the National Parks Bundle. In the package, you get three different guidebooks written by Mike Oswald and a journal. The first is Mike's original guidebook. It's your guide to the national parks. It is got step-by-step itineraries, kid-friendly activities, suggestions on hotels, restaurants, what you need to buy in advance, basically everything you need to launch a vacation at a national park. The second book is the National Park Maps, an atlas of national parks. It is a big book, so it's more than a guidebook and more than an atlas. It has large, full-color maps of all 63 U.S. national parks. It also includes hundreds of photos and suggested itineraries. The third book is for our day hikers. It is a National Parks Day Hiker Guide with thousands of miles of hiking trails in the parks. It'll help you simplify your decisions. It details 280 of the best trails and includes levels of difficulty, distance, and elevation, which elevation gain can really make a difference in a hike. Finally, the package includes America's Best Ideas, My National Parks Journal. It includes all 63 parks with blank pages for future editions. The journal is where you can chronicle your travels and plan your next adventures. You get this amazing parks bundle for $30 a month when you support our public radio station at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. So I want to circle back to underrated parks. And I don't think Joshua Tree is underrated, but it is the closest thing to feeling like you're on another planet for me.
Yeah, Joshua Tree has exploded in visitation. I don't know if that's a social media thing or not, but it's increased by like 2 million visitors in the past decade, from 1 million to 3 million. But you are right. It's very Mars-like or foreign planet-like. And I suspect that the biggest reason for the tourism increase is it's really close to Los Angeles, so a pretty relatively easy quick trip for them. And yeah, but the wacky Joshua trees and goofy rocks, I always think the rocks seem like the sky opened up and just rained huge boulders on the, I guess they're volcanic, that's not how it happened. But a very fun place to go to and rock climber central.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You can definitely, and if you're not a rock climber, it is fascinating just to go watch them work, watch them try. And to me, the Joshua trees look like something out of a Dr. Seuss book.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's that alien foreign planet look to me.
It's a really fun photography place. Like, if you like taking pictures, sunset, sunrise, getting the Joshua trees in the silhouette and goofy rocks, it's pretty. You could spend days just goofing around with your camera.
And it is open after dark, for stargazing, which is like not true of every national park. And I always think that's really neat when like that is a place that if you're into watching like the solar system, it is amazing to take a look at.
Yep, that's those desert parks that I've been recommending. The sky is almost always clear. So if you go there, the half of the park is after dark, right? Where you can, again, either just sit and stare at the stars or take your camera out, do some astrophotography, whatever you want to do.
Any place that isn't a national park yet, but you think it should be?
Oh, honestly, I kind of stay out of those conversations. Everybody's got their thing. I was just reading today, this morning, that Oak Mulgee in Georgia, they're talking about turning that into a national park, and like Katahdin in Maine is always kind of thrown out there, and other Mount St. Helens. So I have no idea. It's a act of Congress, so I don't think it's a predictable thing. So it needs political momentum. There are a lot of beautiful places that are non-national parks, but I'll keep my opinions out of it.
Yeah, the very first national park was Yellowstone. And when Congress created it, they said it was, quote, for the benefit and enjoyment of the people. And I think that's really true of all of these national parks. I want to talk a little bit about the Atlas, which is in this $30 a month package, because some people might be saying, you know, why do I want an Atlas when I'm carrying a cell phone with a map in my pocket?
Yeah, so I asked myself that same question. Actually, the question was presented to me by, I wanted an Atlas of all the national park maps in one big book to take with me when I'm going to the parks, and my book distributor said, why don't you make it? So I went and made it, and I think, so obviously you don't have service everywhere. You can save maps offline and have your phone available to you wherever you go, but there's just something about having a book in your hands and easier to go through. Like maps present an awful lot of information. They're information rich and can do a better job, I think, of sort of distilling information than words do in a lot of ways. So it's nice being able to see the whole region rather than having to pinch and zoom around. And even no matter how big your tablet is, you can't really get a whole idea. And even maps are kind of limiting in that regard too. But I think a paper map in general is better, especially when you're talking about big places like Death Valley is more than 3 million acres. So to look that over on your phone would take quite a while.
Yeah. Not to mention a lot of like your phone, for the most part, won't have elevation change and you can see it in the map. And so if you're not sure if you want to do a hike, like a 1 mile hike with 2000 feet of elevation change is very different than one with 200 feet of elevation change.
Yeah. Right. And I just mentioned Death Valley. If you go a little bit to the west and get to Mount Whitney, then you're talking like 6000 feet of elevation change. And there are people going up there in a day, which is kind of bananas. But that you have to be acclimated to things too. So just knowing the elevation change and the elevation is a good idea too, so you don't have to deal with altitude sickness.
That is a huge thing. Like, having lived in Colorado for several years, if you don't acclimate and then you try to get up to those 13ers, those 14ers, those high peaks, it is like people go to the hospital every year.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're flatlanders over here, so it's a good idea to pay attention to where you're at. Like they talk about the Grand Staircase, right, where you're gradually going up and up and up in elevation. And that's a good way to do it, where you're gaining a couple thousand feet here and there.
Yeah. If you've never hiked a 13,000 or a 14,000-foot mountain, it's a thing to do in Colorado. But I will say it can take 5 or 6 hours to get up and then like 2 hours to get down. And all of that is just the elevation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've gone up Mauna Loa in Hawaii, where they call it the world's most massive mountain. And then you're going to sea level to whatever it is, 10,000-some feet. And yeah, it does a number on whatever your oxygen, starvation.
So the national parks actually have something exciting coming up. So April 20th is free admission day, kicking off National Parks Week. So mark it on your calendars. You can get into any national park on April 20th for free. What are some other days we should mark on our calendars when it comes to the parks?
All of them, I think. I don't think there's any day of the year is a good day to go to a national park. There are some days where I have on good authority where you should not go to parks, like Acadia on the 4th of July. I've heard like you'll never get a parking spot. Just don't even bother trying. But yeah, beyond that, like a lot of the parks kind of revolve around tours. So like Mammoth Cave, Mesa Verde, where it's that one's in Colorado as well, and it's about cultural sites, where you wouldn't see much of the place if you didn't have tickets. So that you need to plan in advance, get online, see what tours are available. So the day is important. But most of the parks are like day agnostic, I guess, if that's the right the right word, where you can go have some fun hiking around and just go. That's the important part.
That does lead into a growing concern that these places are being loved to death, essentially. Like, with the advent of social media, I guess the benefit is people are seeing the parks, thinking that, oh my gosh, that's beautiful, I need to go there. But conversely, they're going there so fast that, you know, staircases that were meant to last a decade are now lasting 3 years.
Yeah, I have, obviously I'm biased making guidebooks. I think people seeing more is generally a good thing. And I think in a lot of ways it's overblown. For sure there are parks that are, like I just mentioned, Acadia and 4th of July, like stay away. So it's, it'd be nice if we had more information. Like there's visitation charts and you can look at those and decide if you want to go to a particularly popular park at a very popular time or not. Because shoulder seasons, spring and fall, are generally pretty calm and campsites are available. But if you're going to Grand Teton in the middle of summer, it's going to be a competition to get those campsites, their lodge rooms, and the 50 or 80 miles of trails that are there are going to be like pretty busy.
More and more, though, a lot of places are going to permit requirements for certain sections of certain parks.
Yep, correct. That's 5 of the parks now are timed entry permits, and that is to alleviate the crowds so you can drive in. The sort of one of the downsides is that if you get a permit, it doesn't guarantee parking. So like going to the Sun Road at Glacier National Park in Montana, you need a permit to enter the west entrance of going to the Sun Road, not the east entrance. So it doesn't limit how many cars are in there, but it does make sure that you can be able to flow in relatively smoothly. Arches is the same thing. Arches is a relatively small park at about 70,000 acres, and there's timed entry permits during peak visitation. Yosemite also brought it back after last year being very busy when they didn't have the timed entry permits. And new for this year is Mount Rainier now has timed entry. Mm. So we'll see. All these things are pilot programs because they are controversial things. I was out doing a bunch of trade shows and kind of taking a informal survey on what people thought. And now, in like fairness, these are people that are tourists and traveling a great distance to see things, and they were about 9 out of 10 were in favor of the timed entry permit system. So, well, okay, maybe it's a good thing. And then you'd have that one person that would come over there like, they're keeping me out of our parks, how dare they? And I'm just like, they're trying to maximize positive experiences, and navigating the internet isn't too big of a thing. But I totally understand why, like, for Glacier, the permits were gone in about 1 to 2 minutes as soon as they become available. So, like, you don't feel like you even have a chance a lot of the time.
You really got to be on it.
Right.
I want to say thank you to David Plum from Columbus and to Sarah from Mount Vernon. This is 89.7 NPR News' Spring Membership Drive. And if you listen to All Sides every day, then now is the time to show your support. 89.7 NPR News is part of your life. You rely on this station for important information. All Sides has been covering the economy. You've heard shows on the challenges of affordable housing, how the Intel development will change Ohio. We're covering the opioid crisis, issues on the ballot, and our upcoming November election. 89.7 NPR News brings you news and information that you can trust to be accurate. Give and support the coverage you count on at WOSU.org, or you can call 866-897-9678. This hour, we're talking about our national parks with author Mike Oswald. If you make a gift of $10 a month, you get his book, Your Guide to the National Parks. It has step-by-step itineraries, kid-friendly activities, and lists of hotels or camping. It's the only guidebook you're going to need for all 63 national parks. And whether you're driving or hiking off the beaten path, it'll help you make the most of your next adventure. Make a gift of $10 a month right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. The book also includes hiking tables, easy-to-find trailhead markers, and popular ranger programs. From Acadia to the Badlands, from Rocky Mountains to Shenandoah, the book's got it all. And it's $10 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Remember that we're listener-supported public radio. And listeners like you give what they can to support the news and information you depend on. If having local news on the radio in Central Ohio is important to you, give now. 866-897-9678. So we've been talking a little bit about travel and limiting entrances. I want to talk a little bit about phones and capturing those moments at the national parks to share on social media. It is a little bit controversial, particularly in certain parks where they are trying to protect both the wildlife and the natural habitat. So I guess be respectful is probably the first thing. But you see so many photos of people going off trail to get the picture that they want.
Yeah, I mean, most of these things, I usually think they're just common sense, right? Like, don't go trampling through a beautiful field of wildflowers and just to get that perfect shot that you want, or don't go stand next to the bison to or whatever, sacrifice up your daughter or son to get that perfect family photo. But it does come back to education and telling people, like, I'm actually more sympathetic to the people that go and do something because they just don't know any better versus, like, their yahoos that I've heard people trying to ride bison, and I'm sure they know better, where they're just kind of being cowboys.
Why would you try to ride a bison?
Why do people climb mountains? I think it's just
because they're there.
Yep, it's just everything. You see something, and you got to do it. But, yeah, I guess it is being careful and not ruining things. Like, going off trails definitely is not a great idea. And there are a fair amount of social trails out there. I think those are generally, like, it's common acceptance that that's okay. But don't go blazing your own path, because that does change things. Like, when it rains, it'll erode new paths and cause different problems for park rangers down the road.
And while we're talking about phones, if you're not following the National Park Service on social media, you really should be, because whoever runs those accounts is hilarious.
Yeah, good dry humor.
Yeah, I want to say thank you to Jamie Mollison from Columbus. Yeah, the National Parks social media is one of my, like, every time it pops up in my feed, it makes me giggle. But they do have lots of good information like that, like, don't feed the animals.
Yep.
Because in all seriousness, people do get gored, people do get injured, people do have to go to the hospital for trying to interact with the wildlife.
Yeah, or vehicles damage, or sometimes it's just curious animal doing something it shouldn't, but more often than not, it's a human that could have used a little education on the situation that they're getting themselves into. We were talking about how people just don't understand. Like, I think people don't understand going to Yellowstone or Wind Cave. Like, the bison are literally right there. Like, they're causing traffic jams, like, every single day. And this is their home. Let them do their thing, and don't go putting yourself, like, making yourself the center of attention in those situations, right?
Yeah, we were camping in the Redwoods probably 12-ish years ago. And we woke up because our campsite was on, like, a lake bed. And we woke up and there was an entire herd of elk. I mean, it was incredible, but it was also like, don't move a muscle.
Right? And there's a lot of things like that that people don't think about too, right? If you just spray your rain fly with some scented thing, you might have bears or other animals like, hey, what, this smells good, let's check this out, and you have an unwelcome guest in the middle of the night.
Oh yeah, there's lots of great video of bears getting into cars, particularly because you've left some sort of, like, peanut butter based like, protein bar in your console.
Yep, just like us humans, everything's food motivated, and they figure out how to get it one way or another once they know where that food's at.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about camping safety. So obviously, if you're going to go and spend the night in these national parks, there are things to consider, particularly when it comes to animals like bears.
Yeah, I think every park's a little different. Like, some you're using ropes to tie your food and scented items up in a tree. Some
and they
places,
mean it. Like, it's not just the thing you should maybe do.
Right. Yeah, when you reserve your backcountry permits in situations like that and they tell you what to do, you follow those instructions. Most often they'll have lockers where you just put your food, and they're far enough away from your campsite, and wherever you prepare your food is generally not anywhere near the campsite too. So it's really just a matter of following instructions. So read through the things, take it seriously, and in places where you're almost guaranteed to encounter wildlife, they'll actually mandatory you have to talk to a ranger, sit down and have an orientation before you go and do something. So your hand is held pretty well in most of these places, but there is a certain amount of accountability and personal responsibility just to know what you're doing. And then, like, the other bear things, like bear spray, bells, whatever, like, do whatever makes you feel safe. I generally feel like just having a conversation, making some noise. I'm usually on my own, so if I'm coming around a blind corner or some tall bear grass or something, I just make some noise and nothing bad's ever happened.
That way you don't surprise them.
Right.
Yeah, my husband was overnight camping once, and a bunch of raccoons got into their cooler, and they ate the chips and dip.
Everybody loves snacks. That's, I wonder if they're sitting back and actually using the dip appropriately.
I hope so.
That's, I've actually had more issues with like rodents and things like that than the bears are generally not a problem.
Yeah, raccoons with those like dexterous little hands, like they can get into anything.
Yep.
But that, you know, brings up a good point. There are so many ranger-led programs in national parks. There's even programs just for your kids, right? Like you could go do a more complicated hike and your kids could be at a ranger program.
Yeah, absolutely. The park rangers are a national treasure just on their own, in addition to all these spectacular natural landscapes. But a huge buffet of ranger programs at all the places. And I've found that the eastern parks like Indiana Dunes, Cuyahoga Valley, some of the ones that are in more urban areas, they have a much wider, broader range of ranger programs. So they're definitely worth looking into ahead of time, of course. There are some like Congaree National Park in South Carolina. You have to reserve for a couple of their ranger programs. So take a look at what they're offering and get your reservation, your tickets beforehand. But for sure, the junior ranger program for your kid, it's a good way of getting you to explore the whole park and interact with the environment. And then you come back and get sworn in as a junior ranger, and the whole ceremony is pretty cute.
Yeah, they also have a passport, and you can buy this passport book, and then you get it stamped at every national park that you go to.
Yep, they take care of all our sort of human ailments. If you like collecting things, you get the passport, and then you go get your stamps. And that's been like exploded in popularity, where parks have stamps now all over the place. They just had a Eclipse stamp at a couple of the units. Cuyahoga Valley had one, and I forget where I saw another, but a couple of the units had their Eclipse stamps for when totality was happening. And definitely a fun thing to do, and to keep you interested in our public lands and Department of the Interior, National Park Service.
And if any of you have a kid that's going to be a fourth grader next year, the Every Kid in a Park program gives free passes to the national park to fourth graders and their families.
Yeah, an absolutely brilliant idea. This one was that they learned that kind of kids' opinions of things are molded at that age. And it's been really fun watching kids like talk about taking their families on a trip when they have their national park pass to take care of the fee. And then sometimes they even do the planning for what they're going to do. And it's pretty cute when the kids are taking the parents along.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And this is our membership drive. Remember that gifts from listeners like you are the foundation of our budget. So we don't answer to commercial influences in public radio. We're not beholden to shareholders. We only answer to you, our listeners. So make a gift now and support this mission at WOSU.org, or you can call 866-897-9678. When you make a gift of $30 a month as a sustainer, you get a great thank you gift package called the National Parks Bundle, and it includes three of Mike Oswald's books and a journal. So the first is Your Guide to the National Parks. Then there's the National Parks Maps, which is an atlas, and the Day Hiker's Guide to the National Parks. In addition to those three, we're going to throw in a journal called America's Best Ideas, My National Parks Journal. It's a great place to store your memories and make notes on your favorite adventures. It would even be great to give a kid to store and write their adventures from a national park. So you can get this bundle for $30 a month or a one-time gift of $360. It's a great way to plan your next vacation and support public radio. So give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. I think one of the reasons people listen to public radio is because it takes you places. It takes you on adventures. You hear reporting from across the country and around the world. You're more well-informed and a better citizen when you listen and learn from public radio. This station helps you to better understand the world around you and takes you to places and introduces to people that you might never have met. So take a moment right now to show your appreciation by becoming a member. Give it WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. So, you know, what I really love about the book the Your Guide to National Parks, is that you could scour the internet for all this information, but it's like, it would take you hours probably to research each park, to make sure you're getting good sources, to make sure that it's quality information. And instead, what I love about this is you can look through the section of a park in maybe 20 minutes with your family, and then anything that you want more information on, then you can go look to the internet, which is kind of the opposite of how we think about doing it these days. But I'm like, that's a lot more efficient.
Yeah, for sure. I think people can see it as a compliment to take a look at what's in there and get some ideas, and then either go to YouTube or social media and give it a search. I was just talking to one guy who's like, man, I love your book, paging through it. And he's like, and then I just go check out every hike that I'm thinking about doing, go into YouTube, type it in, and take a look at what's all going on there. And he's like, that's what I've picked all my trails from. So yeah, it's there is kind of a bottomless pit of information, and some of it's all ranges in quality. But it is nice to have everything right there in front of you to compare and contrast and kind of figure out the right thing for you, right?
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about summer vacations, but fall and winter will be here before we know it. I feel like life speeds up as you get older. So where are some great places to see fall leaves? Like, what's your favorite fall park?
So Great Smoky Mountains definitely sort of gets the title, I think, of the most favorite fall park. And I was just looking at their visitation chart the other day, and there's a pretty big skyrocket in the bar graph for October. But I think Acadia maybe is my favorite for fall in October in Maine. It's really pretty in contrast, like the trees against the rocks. It makes it a little more unique, and the ocean too right there. So it's I think I'd probably pick that one.
Oh, yeah. I will make a quick pitch for Colorado, because the quaking aspen in October are really beautiful.
Yeah, a lot of things I haven't seen in different seasons. So I think probably anywhere with trees is a good – even Wisconsin's really beautiful.
Yeah. And what about winter?
Winter, you have a lot of good choices for national parks. Like, if you – those desert parks I mentioned that I like directing people to – those are always a good option, and it's
they're more temperate then.
Yep, everybody loves escaping those cold winters, cold snowy winters. Except for this one, we didn't have a particularly cold or snowy winter. But you've got Death Valley in California Nevada border.
Oh, that's a smart idea. And, go in like December.
They have a bunch of sand dunes. They have and there will be snow there. There's a 10,000-foot mountain, Telescope Peak, and Dante's View. So you'll have snow, you'll have sand, you'll have like 70-degree days. And then southern Utah is always a good choice, where it's like all public land. You've got five national parks there. It does occasionally snow in winter, but you don't have to worry about it too much, because the snow rarely sticks. And as long as you like rocks, red rocks and slot canyons and lots of goofy geological formations, that's a great place to go to.
And if you are going to winter hike in any national park, you should consider getting like the little like crampons for your shoes.
Get some traction devices.
Yeah,
for sure, if you're going to be in snow or mud.
Seeing a lot of people over the years like slip sliding up and down a mountain.
Yeah, it depends on what you're going to face. Like, a lot of the trails are generally worn enough where you may not need them. But if it's one of those like the desert parks where it does turn from like rain or melting snow to ice, then you definitely want some sort of traction device. Some parks where you have deep snow, you might want snowshoes to make it easier on you, or else you wouldn't even be able to get through there.
And a lot of times the rangers will let you know what kind of conditions the trails are in day of.
Yep, and a lot of those things where you're doing something that you may not normally do, like snowshoe hikes, they will actually be ranger programs. There are ranger snowshoe hikes, there are ranger cross-country ski outings. There's a lot of those different sort of one-off events if you're going to a park during a less popular time, like the winter.
I want to say thank you to Robert and Karen Merritt in Columbus. We want to try to hear from 10 more people this hour to make this hour a success. And this is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News. And we're very excited to be talking about travel and our country's amazing national parks today. Our thank you gifts will help you as you travel the country and visit these parks, whether you plan to visit 3, 5, or all 63 of them. You're probably going to go on a hike or two during your trips. And with a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer, you get a copy of the book, Your Guide to National Parks. This book, by our guest, Mike Oswald, has 450 photographs, 160 maps, 50 hiking tables. Like, this is the only book you're going to need to explore the national parks. It's your ultimate dashboard companion with 11 road trip suggestions. And while you're on your road trip, you can listen to public radio stations across the country. Become a sustaining member at $10 a month and get this great book at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And thank you to Laurel from Columbus. We've got 9 more gifts to go now and less than 15 minutes to do it. If you can afford $30 a month as a sustainer, you can get the National Parks Bundle. This includes the guidebook I just mentioned, and an atlas, a day hiker's guide, and a journal. It's got everything you're going to need to plan truly memorable getaways. If you're planning to visit several parks this summer, the books in this bundle will help you plan your trip and make the most of your vacation time. Give today and support public radio. $30 a month or a one-time gift of $360. And hurry, because you're running out of time to give this hour. So don't wait. We are listener-supported public radio, and we count on you, our listeners, for the largest part of our budget. So go ahead and give now in any amount that you can afford. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. So, in your opinion, are there any must-see parks? Like places you definitely want to see before you die?
I think those three favorites should absolutely be the top of the list. Glacier in Montana, Yellowstone in Wyoming, and Yosemite in California. Grand Canyon, too, but it's one of those ones where I think Yellowstone and Grand Canyon are the two places where I meet the most people where they're disappointed by them. And Grand Canyon, I think it's because most people go to the South Rim, look in, and just like, whatever, they're disappointed for whatever reason. Where if you spend a little more time and get in there and see it, like there's light changes or whatever, meet it a little more intimately, you'll have a totally different experience. And Yellowstone, I think a lot of people get sort of the heavily commercialized side of things where they just go look at Old Faithful and there's bleachers surrounding it where it's kind of a weird thing to be in nature and feel like you're at a sporting event or mall or whatever it feels like, where it's I can kind of understand not enjoying that too much. And the bison too, like if you get in a bison jam and you spend a lot of time just sitting in your car waiting to go nowhere, I can understand that. But those two places, if you explore them a little more thoroughly and have a better understanding of what's all available there, you have way better experiences.
Or maybe go during non-peak visit times.
Yep. That would be another, if we want to do a cold weather winter destination, Yellowstone would be a great choice there, where you can get in snowmobile or by snow coach, and some of the lodges are still open. You can cross-country ski. They'll take you to the Grand Canyon, to the Yellowstone. There's a lot of good experiences to be had there in winter.
Oh, that's a really good point. What about hot springs? Because there's a lot of national parks that offer hot springs.
There are. I honestly don't know of many hot springs. Like Yellowstone is the first that comes to mind with people hopping in hot pots. And
never do that unless you're supposed to do it, unless they're clearly marked to do it.
Correct. Right. And then there's like Hot Springs National Park in Arkansas, where it's not really hot springs to be sitting and bathing in, where it's you actually take a bath in a bathtub and soak in the mineral-rich waters, which is kind of a weird thing too, where it's a park built around commercialized bathhouses. but yeah, I'm sure. I think most of the hot springs though are generally in national forest land and not national park land. But there are a bunch out there in Idaho and Montana, Oregon, Colorado.
Yeah, I think a lot of them tend to be located out west.
Mm-hmm.
So, like so many places, the national parks have had some staffing issues. Are they actively trying to hire more rangers, or how is life going at these national parks?
I honestly don't know. Like, when you talk to a park ranger and they're out there in the environment, they're almost always happy and they're at home in their happy place, having a good time, seeing things. But I have read articles where morale is very low. And I saw that staffing actually had decreased in the last decade compared to what it was from 2000 to 2010, which is interesting considering that visitation has increased during the pandemic. So I can understand where those two are probably, there's probably a correlation there between staffing and then morale. But for the most part, I think they're making the most of the situation that they're in and happy to be funded and happy to be living in these beautiful places and showing them off to visitors.
I want to say thank you to Patty Calbyfish from Worthington. Thank you so much for making a donation this hour. You know, I was thinking, if you knew somebody that's got a birthday coming up, this National Parks bundle with a pass, because you can buy a year-long pass that gets you into all the national parks. If you know somebody outdoorsy in your life, I think that would be like a great gift.
Yeah, the National Park Pass, also a great thing. $80 gets you into any of the National Park Service units that charge a fee. Also works at Bureau of Land Management land, National Forest land. And there are a variety of passes, too. If you know a veteran, if you know a senior, there's a veteran's pass, there's a senior pass. If someone has a disability in your family, there's a disability pass as well. And some of those are lifetime ones, so better to know about it than to not.
We're still looking to hear from 8 more people this hour. So if you're thinking about donating, now is the time, especially with summer coming up, because it is a great time to go out and see a national park, make a trip of it. A lot of national parks have cabins and camping and various, like, however rough you want to go, there's definitely that level of roughness for you. And they're surprisingly reasonable in price. Like, you look at the price of the cabin sometimes and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Again, whole wide range, right? Like some of the sort of less popular areas, you can like, $70 for a night there. That's pretty good. Like Lassen Volcanic, there's in California, it's a pretty reasonable price. But then if you scoot over to the Rockies in Grand Teton, you're looking at $300 a night. You're like, oh, yeah, different types of people going to different types of places. But for the most part, you can find any price range. There are a lot of free campgrounds. There are a lot of, actually, in all the sort of flagship parks like Grand Canyon and Yellowstone, they'll actually have an RV village where they have full hookups and you can fit any size rig in there. So those are a little more expensive. But some of the front country campgrounds are also free.
Yeah, and a lot of times if it's just a campground, they'll have like a designated area with showers and like toilets. So it's not totally, totally rough in it.
Yep, that's the thing too. Like any level of amenities, you can find it. You just got to know where to look for it.
And you can find some of that guidance in the National Parks Guidebook that we're offering this hour. So this is All Sides. And every day we bring you interesting conversations with people who are experts in their field. Today, the subject is national parks. And Mike Oswald is certainly an expert when it comes to our national parks. Support public radio by giving now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. For $30 a month as a sustainer, you're going to get the National Parks Bundle. This gift package is the ultimate guide to everything you're going to need to know about America's national parks. And with that gift of $30 a month, you're going to support All Sides with Anna Staber. Support your future listening with a gift. And don't wait, because this hour is almost over. You can give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Make a gift right now before the hour is over, and your gift in any amount is so powerful. Listeners and members are the power of public radio, and you're supporting a show that is truly local. I know the news cycle can seem relentless, and we've been covering it all. But on this show, there is a room for a break from the news, right? Shows about travel, enjoying the outdoors, gardening, planting. These shows are important, too. So support All Sides today by making a gift at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And thank everyone so much for your support. And thank to Evan Eos in Columbus. Now we have 7 more before the hour ends, so you can meet this goal if you call right now. And it could be with a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer. That'll get you the copy of the Your Guide to National Parks. If you can do $30 a month, you get the whole bundle, which includes two books, an atlas, and a journal. So don't wait. Give now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. What was the very first national park that you visited?
The very first national park I visited was Grand Canyon, actually, and I was one of those typical visitors where I went up to the rim with friends and looked in, and we're just like, kind of shrugged, and we went a ways down, and we hiked into South Kaibab Trail for a little bit, and like, this is pretty neat, and then walked back up. It was a little slushy on top, and it's kind of dangerous, too, where those traction devices you were talking about before would have maybe came in handy, and we went on our merry way, and that's kind of when I was looking back on that and starting to see more national parks, I'm like, more people could use more guidance. But again, to each their own. Like, I've seen so many people just show up at a national park, no plan, no idea whatsoever they're getting themselves up to, and have a great time. So if that's your way of doing things, go for it. If you're a planner, do your planning, and you can find there's unlimited information all over the place. So plan till you can't anymore.
Yeah, I think there's a balance, though. Like, you can definitely over plan, or you could under, but you know, the nice thing about this gives you the tools to do as much or as little planning as you want, right? Like, if you just want to kind of get a lay of the land, look at some like trails, get a sense of things, you can do that. Or if you want an hour by hour itinerary, you can do that too.
Yeah, you got to keep those expectations in check too, just to make sure you're not getting overly hyped about what you're going to do. So it's have a sort of overview and good outline on what you're going to do.
Yeah, actually, I really like the Day Hiker's Guide for that, too, because these are things that you can do in a day, and you get a sense of how strenuous they are, where the trailheads are, if you're going to need a permit, because sometimes you do need a permit, especially to park in a parking lot. You don't want to get towed. I don't think they would tow you in a national park. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. The
you might get ticketed. The park ranger might write you a ticket.
There definitely are some tickets. Great Smoky Mountains now, you have to get a parking permit to park there. So that one, you'll get cited for sure. If you're parked somewhere you shouldn't be, like, it's definitely more common getting tickets for things now. Or even just like leaving your pet in your car. Even if it's a RV with air conditioning, you might get cited for that too. So it's that could be another contributor to the morale issue, where they're feeling like meter maids going around issuing citations rather than doing their traditional job of taking care of the park.
Thank you to Thomas Trinter from Columbus. We have 6 more gifts to go this hour. Again, the number is 866-897-9678. Or you can give online at WOSU.org. Actually, I want to talk a minute about pets, because there's definitely some parks where you shouldn't bring your pets and some where they're totally welcome to come along with you on the trails.
Yeah, I think the general park rule is that a pet can go wherever your vehicle can go. So if you're going to stay close to your car, it's roads, campgrounds, trailheads, visitor centers, not in the visitor centers, but in the parking lot. The only park here, again, that I know that's very pet-friendly is Acadia, where pets can go on the shuttles. They can go on quite a few of the trails, not the ladder trails. There's some steep ladder trails with rungs and rails that lead kind of straight up 1,000-foot hills or mountains, whatever you want to call them. Can go on the beaches. But for the most part, like, it's an interesting contrast where national forests are very pet-friendly. National parks are not the most pet-friendly. But it is shifting. There's a gradual shift towards parks being more pet-friendly than they have been in the past.
And you do want to be careful. Unfortunately, there's, like, tragic, especially with some of those hot springs, like in Yellowstone, where the dog will run ahead and fall on one. That's the end of the dog, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they don't know what they're getting themselves into, too. You're taking them into foreign land, and they don't know the dangers.
I want to say thank you to Denise D. Trang Lee from Pickerington. So 5 more to our goal this hour. You can call 866-897-9678. And remember, for $10 a month, you get the Your Guide to National Parks, so the award-winning guidebook. And it's the only guidebook you're ever going to need for all 63 national parks. Or for $30 a month, as a sustainer, you get a bundle. So you get the Your Guide. You get the National Parks Maps, which is a big, beautiful atlas of all the national parks. You get the Day Hiker's Guide to National Parks and a National Park Journal, where you can record all of your thoughts. I think that'd be great for a kid. My daughter loves to write, and I think she would just love, like, writing down her thoughts, and then I can read it when she's an adult and just reminisce about, like, you know, when she was a kid and we took her to all these parks. Thank you to Charissa Durst from Columbus. We got 4 more to go. You know, I do think that's, like, I hadn't been thinking about that, but letting your kids doodle and fill it out and, like, work with the journal, it could become, like, a really great keepsake or scrapbook of your time in the parks.
Absolutely. And I've seen people making their own paintings at a lot of beautiful locations.
Oh,
and
I love that.
So, right, if you want to just make your own artwork, put it in there. Or there's tons of National Park stickers out there if you just want to kind of make it your own with stickers. Or stamps, you could be collecting the National Park stamps too.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a good memento. Like, my bookshelves at home are filled with all my journals from traveling around, just notes, more whatever. It's not the memento type thing. It's more useful to look back on and see what's what. But
doodling some of the animals that you come across, like the redwoods are really famous for those giant orange yellow slugs.
Banana slugs.
Yep. Ooh, those things are like bigger than your hand sometimes. Like they're huge.
Yep, put in your journal. Draw a picture.
Thank you so much to Mike Oswald, a travel writer and the author of Your Guide to the National Parks. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Anna.
And don't forget to call 866-897-9678 or WOSU.org to donate and support this station. This is WOSU FM and HD1 Columbus, 89.7 NPR News, global, local.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.